We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley, getting ready for the Arizona USC football game. Guys, we're at the halfway point of the season. Thoughts?
It's crazy. See, most years it sneaks up on you. I think the early start to Arizona season, this feels way past the halfway point to me. What do you think, Michael Lev?
Well, that's what Kevin Sumlin said, and he cited a couple factors. One, training camp, which happens every year, but also the fact that they've had two bye weeks already. So they're pretty deep into this thing. Technically, though, they are halfway through the schedule, which is the way I'm putting it, not halfway through the season. They're 4-2, which is one game better than they were a year ago. And talking to several players the other day, many of them said that it feels like they're way ahead of where they were the last season. I know they just got blown out at Washington. And if you look at lineups kind of game for game versus the first six games of last year, they also got blown out against Houston. You know, they had kind of the gritty defensive victory over Cal. They had the gritty defensive victory over UCLA. So maybe there's a lot of similarities there. You know, the one blowout win over an FCS opponent that happened each time. I think the couple differences, though. Number one, even if you look at that Washington game compared to Houston, that Houston game was over in the first quarter. Washington game, they were in it until the fourth quarter when kind of the Washington wore them down.
Yeah.
Even the Hawaii game, going back to that, they fought back in that game, which is not something that would have happened last year. They were down, what, 2 scores, 14 to nothing?
Yeah.
They fought back. Mm-hmm. They tied the game. They could have taken the lead late in the game. So I think there's a lot of positive signs in that regard, but also some worrisome signs. As I talked about in my Cat Stats piece this week, the pass rush. This is a very big deal. They have 5 sacks in 6 games. They are on pace for the lowest, to tie for the lowest amount of sacks they've ever had as a program keeping those records.
And how many by Jalen Harris?
Yeah, 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah. So if Jalen Harris wasn't here, like, they'd have as many sacks as me, you, and Justin, basically.
Basically. Okay. Yeah. That's a big problem. And that leads to a big differential in lost yardage from what the yardage they're losing compared to what other teams are losing. And that leads to a deficit in field position, which is exacerbated by the punting problems that they've had. You add all that up, I mean, Arizona is not a team that can afford to have like a minus 20 field position differential because of all these factors. So that worries me a little bit heading into the second half.
So just a quick layout of the next, 30 minutes of this podcast. We will go over our Pac-12 picks for the week at the end of the podcast. We'll also preview Arizona-USC and get into the details of that game. But since we're at the halfway point of the season, we decided to put together our midseason awards, talking about offensive MVP, defensive MVP, special teams MVP, best newcomer, second half breakout player, and top moment and best uniform combination. I know, Ryan, you want to talk about the uniforms.
This is this is basically the Oscars, our midseason Oscars, right?
So yeah.
If one of us rambles, you're going to have to play us off with some music. We'll have to finish it up, but I'm very excited to get into these awards, and I think you guys might be surprised by some of my picks.
Are we all surprised that Arizona is 4-2 at this point in the season, or is this about where we thought they'd be?
I think it's where I thought they'd be in July. I believe when they were 1-0, I laid out a case to you guys that they could be 4-1 if everything broke right. I mean, it's their schedule. I don't know, Michael, and we can argue about this probably, but I'm not sure if they're any better or worse than they were a year ago. I think that the first half of this season's schedule is very, very, very helpful.
Yeah.
And that the second half schedule is going to be brutal. And, you know, if they're 4-2 right now, and if I were to say to you right now they finished 6-6, given who they have coming up on their schedule, I mean, wouldn't you take that?
Absolutely.
Would you take that given that they have to play USC and Oregon and Stanford and ASU there? I mean, to me.
Did you mention Utah?
Utah, my pick to win the conference.
At Stanford.
They finished the season playing three top 20 opponents.
Right.
That's brutal.
Right. I mean, to me, that's what it is I'm not sure that we thought they'd be 4-2 because we all thought they'd be that good. I think it's just the teams that they've played really matched up well with.
I thought they were going to start the season 5-0. I really did. Mm-hmm. I thought they'd win the Hawaii game and win the next four. And then they'd, you know, kind of have a tougher time over the back half of the schedule. I predicted them to go 7-5. With, you know, picking off a win here or there. I think Oregon State was one, and then I thought ASU, that, you know, they'd finally kind of get over the hump against them because you never know what can happen in a rivalry game, and they honestly outplayed them for, you know, at least a half plus in each of the previous two meetings, be very motivated to win that game. But 6-6, 7-5, I think are both within range. Get a few breaks here and there, get some better play from the quarterback position. 8-4, that's probably the absolute ceiling, I would say, based on what the schedule is at this point. But that would require, you know, at least one upset against USC, Oregon, or Utah.
Right.
At least one. And then winning all the other games.
Right. I think it would require probably two road wins. Right. I think it would require beating, maybe it's SC at SC and Stanford at Stanford. I mean, I think those are maybe the two, are those the two most winnable. I mean, take away Oregon State?
No, I would say ASU. I'd say ASU is as
really?
Winnable as USC.
I don't think so.
Well, because USC's depleted this week, right? They got a lot of injuries.
I understand. I know that they're really banged up, especially most of the injuries being on defense. But like I said, that rivalry game against ASU, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, weird stuff mm-hmm. happens no matter what the rankings are, no matter what the standings are. I just think there's a different vibe to that game than there is to this one. And I know ASU's, they've got a lot of good things going. Very promising young quarterback. Mm-hmm. Seem to be building a good thing there. But they don't blow anybody out. It's always a close game mm-hmm. against ASU. So, I mean, I think if you're talking about the remaining road games, mm-hmm. I think Stanford's vulnerable. Just based on everything that we've seen from them so far this year, quarterback injuries, offensive line injuries, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Looked pretty good against Washington.
They did. Oregon, I'm chalking up as a loss. I just don't see them going up to Autzen and winning. And then I think ASU is at least possible.
But since we're doing our midseason awards, let's get cracking on these. So I already mentioned all the categories. First up, offensive MVP. Ryan, I'm going to start with you.
Yes.
Who's your offensive MVP through the first half of Arizona's 2019 season?
Gary Brightwell. And it's funny, there will be a story in Friday's Arizona Daily Star about this. You know, their best player right now is a running back, but it's not that running back. It's not J.J. Taylor. It's Gary Brightwell. He's averaging, you know, 6.5 yards per carry. That's almost a yard per carry more than J.J. Taylor at this point. He's tied for first with four rushing touchdowns. He's somebody who really has stepped up. And I think that he stepped up and began playing well before J.J. Taylor got banged up. This is somebody who I think has been a very valuable weapon for them. And again, it's strange to pick an offensive MVP because although Arizona has scored a bunch of points, I don't think they have a clear offensive MVP at this point. But Gary Brightwell has proven to be kind of a do everything guy. And, I'm a big fan of his here at the midway point of the season.
Lev, who's your offensive MVP?
Yeah, I picked an offensive lineman, Josh McCauley, because
shout out
there. Justin used to be an offensive lineman, which like never comes up at any point in any conversation. But so here's the thing. When you look at their skill position players, it's just they've been spreading the wealth so much at receiver, at running back. It's never really one guy. It's a bunch of guys. Obviously, Khalil Tate got strong consideration from me for this, but then the Washington game happened, and I just felt like I couldn't pull the trigger. That he had one really bad game and then missed an entire game. As well, Josh McCauley, he's a constant. You know, knock wood, they never have any bad snaps. Aside from that one weird first half against UCLA where he, I think he had three penalties called against him. Steady, solid leader of that offensive line, which for the most part, I'd say has played pretty well.
Absolutely. My offensive MVP, to me, honestly, I think this was a no-brainer. And I would have to pick Khalil Tate just because the running back group, a lot of inconsistency there. J.J. Taylor's been banged up. Gary Brightwell has recently been banged up. Bam Smith missed last week as well. So, I mean, we've seen inconsistency out of that position group, and there hasn't been a number one wide receiver for Arizona. So as much as I wanted to pick an offensive lineman, I thought, I'm going to go with Khalil Tate. And I know Grant Gunnell looked great against UCLA, but at the same time, it's also UCLA. I don't know if I can trust Grant Gunnell on the road against Colorado to do what Khalil Tate did. And we were talking about this, you know, before the podcast, that one game that Khalil Tate somewhat ran wild was against Texas Tech. You know, he had an 84-yard touchdown in that game. I'm not sure Grant Gunnell can do that. So I think, you know, and Khalil Tate is also, he's been setting milestones. He's reached milestones. You know, he's the only quarterback besides Marcus Mariota to throw for 5,000 yards and rush for 2,000 in a career. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that conversation, I think you deserve to be the offensive MVP.
Right. Khalil Tate at this point, too, I think that there's a large enough sample size that we know exactly what we're getting out of him. Right.
Yes.
I think he is still flawed. I think that the talk about him being, you know, a more well-rounded player, I'm not sure that's come to fruition in the first half of this season. But my goodness, when he is on and when he's feeling it, there's not a more dynamic player in the league.
Absolutely. All right. Now moving over to the defensive side of the ball. Who's your defensive MVP? Lev, I'm going to start with you this time.
Yeah, I picked Tony Fields, and it wasn't because he leads the team in tackles. This was more the eyeball test for me. He just seems like the most active, most productive defensive player week in, week out, even more so than his sidekick, Colin Schooler. He also has generated a lot of pressure on the quarterback, even though he doesn't have any sacks, and a lot of those pressures have come in important situations. That is not an officially kept statistic by most schools. So, you know, you don't see it on the stat sheet, but, you know, from rewatching those games, he's really improved as a pass rusher. I think the competition with Anthony Pandy has elevated his game quite a bit. You know, as a freshman, he started here pretty much from day one when he came in spring, had the job as a sophomore. But when you start feeling, you know, that competition a little bit, you know, that maybe tends to raise your level. And I feel like we've seen, Tony Fields playing his best football.
Right.
I'm going to go with Anthony Pandy. It's funny. Michael mentioned him. I think he's somebody who has been able to move around a little bit, who's been, his versatility, I think, has really, allowed Marcel Yates to put his best 11 players on the field. I think that it's an opportunity, for Arizona. Arizona is better at most positions because Anthony Pandy can play multiple positions. And I know that that's really hard to quantify. I know that there's no statistic that says that. But I think for that reason alone, Anthony Pandy's your guy.
I agree with you, Lev. I picked Tony Fields as well. I'm sorry.
Agreeing, Lev.
First agreement of the award ceremony. Yeah, I like Tony Fields and what he's been able to do this year. Even last year, I don't know if you agree with me or not, Lev. You feel like Tony Fields almost kind of fell into Colin Schooler's shadow a little bit? Because I think, you know, Colin Schooler started to receive more pub last year. He got a little bit more attention last year. And nobody was really talking about Tony Fields. When they were together as a freshman, it was Tony Fields and Colin Schooler. And then Colin Schooler emerged last year. Tony Fields kind of fell a little bit, and then he felt the competition from Anthony Pandy. And tip of the cap to Tony Fields as well, 31 consecutive starts going back to his freshman season. And I said, you know, if we had an Ironman award, we'd give it to Tony Fields. So I think Tony Fields is definitely the defensive MVP. Special teams.
Not much to discuss here, is there?
Nope.
Unanimous. Yeah. Everybody pick Lucas Haversick.
I'd like to pick a long snapper, but I would no. I think it's a no-brainer here.
Can I give you a fun Lucas Haversick stat?
Yeah.
What's that?
Sure. Arizona's opponents have returned 6 kickoffs in 6 games. That's 1 kickoff per game. And when we talk about how yards really matter,
yeah,
especially because Arizona's not getting a pass rush, because Arizona is an often penalized team, typically, quote-unquote, winning with the most penalties every week. Something as simple as a touchback, I think, is a very big deal. And say what you will about Lucas Haversick, he struggled a little bit on kickoffs, but that leg plays pretty much anywhere, and as evidenced by the touchback numbers. I think it's very, very impressive.
He's also 5-for-7 on field goals, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. 2-for-3 from 50-plus, 2-for-2 from the 40 to 49 range. I didn't even think about this, but I mean, that play he made against Hawaii, where, yeah. I mean, it was penalty, penalty, penalty. The field goal went from a 38-yarder to a 53-yarder, and he made it. He made it. The third one got blocked, quote-unquote, that none of them counted, obviously, and then he just drilled another one like it was nothing. And the crowd was screaming, and it was a very stressful situation, and everyone was freaking out, and he was coolest guy in the building.
Ditto. I can't say anything else. What about best newcomer for the Arizona Wildcats this year? We all had different answers.
Yeah, Ryan, you go.
Go.
Me? I like Tavian Cunningham. He's a great story for starters, and I think I'm a sucker for a great story. Junior college track guy, somebody who, you know, is sort of fits the mold of those old, Al Davis, Oakland Raiders wide receivers, right? He's just a fast dude. And right now he has 21 catches for 230 yards, 2 touchdowns. Given that he showed up in June, he showed up about the time Michael Levis started working on his football preview capsules. That's pretty impressive to me. And he's been a very pleasant surprise and a heck of a story.
And I'm not going to lie to you guys. When I heard Arizona was bringing on Tavian Cunningham, I didn't think much of him. Like, okay, well, here's a junior college guy. There's not much film on him. You try to Google him, you can't find much on the guy. I mean, he's a big mystery.
Right. And he was filler. He was a guy. I mean, he took roster spot of
Devon Cooper.
Cooper, who quit the team in the middle of the offseason.
Exactly.
I mean, you're right.
I thought it was just a body.
There was no reason to expect him to be anything more than just a guy.
Yeah.
And right now, he's playing and doing well.
Lev?
I'm going to one up you on Cunningham. Trayvon Mason is my pick. He arrived on campus officially in July, even later than Tavian Cunningham did. Took him a little bit of time to get in shape, but man, he has really come on in a major way. He was in the backfield a lot against Washington, had a career high 7 tackles. He's really formed a good combination with Fintan Connolly inside. We were talking some pretty inside football stuff the other day, Justin, how he said Fintan likes to play the 2 technique, mm-hmm. which I guess means right over the center or right over the guard, and Trayvon Mason likes to play the 3 technique, which means you're shaded off to the shoulder, and the two of them have really done well. The first half of that game against Washington, I mean, crazy thing to say, but Arizona kind of controlled the line of scrimmage when Washington's offense was on the field and Arizona's defense was on the field, and Trayvon Mason had a lot to do with that. I also think maybe the biggest position of need heading into the season was defensive tackle, and he has filled a big void.
I know he was on the team last year, but
I like this one.
He wasn't eligible. I'm going to go with Texas A&M transfer Robert Conjol holding down that left guard spot. You know, Lev said earlier, they were, you know, Arizona's offensive line, especially in the interior, with those three guys between McCauley, Conjol, and Cody Creason, those guys are rocks right there. And we've seen them dominate or control the line of scrimmage in the first batch of games. And then he gets banged up against Colorado. Now, Bryson Kane did step in and do his part, but he missed the game against Washington. Peyton Fears moved from right tackle over to that guard spot. And Washington really brought it to Arizona. Now, with that being said, they probably would have controlled the line of scrimmage if Conjo was still there. But, you know, for him being out and for Washington to do what they did against Arizona's offensive line, I think without a doubt, Robert Conjo's the best newcomer.
Yeah, it enhanced your case for sure when he didn't play.
Yeah.
And the offensive line struggled.
All right, let's go ahead to top moment.
Yeah.
Through the first 6 games of the season. There were a handful of them.
Ryan and I picked the same.
Yeah, I think we agree
the same
on this
one. And it wasn't a successful moment for Arizona, but we both picked Khalil Tate's, you know, mad dash toward the end zone at the end of the Hawaii game. Which, I mean, that was like one of those, even if you're in the press box, I mean, you're like getting up out of your seat. I think, you know, my tweet immediately after was just all caps, oh my God. I mean, it was like, is he really going to do this? Is he really going to try this? Is this going to happen? And he fell 1 yard short. You know, it was the Kevin Dyson result, at the end of the play. And it
was tackled by defensive tackle too, which
was
impressive.
A great play by that kid who hustled all the way down the field. And Ryan and I talked about it extensively in the immediate aftermath, and we both agreed that he didn't see that kid coming, you know, and that's probably what ended up, undermining the play in the end. If he saw him, he might have been able to put the stiff arm out or may have sort of adjusted his route a little bit, but that kid came out of nowhere. Awesome hustle play by him, but super exciting, kind of, and signaled like, wait, hey, Khalil's back. You know, I think the jury's still out on whether he's fully back, but he certainly looked like he was back at that moment.
See, and I like Justin's pick too, because I would not have thought of this as a moment, but go ahead, tell the people.
When Kevin Sumlin iced UCLA kicker J.J. Molson to win the game. You know, Arizona, they were already up 20-17, and I thought, okay, well, here we go. We're going to be up late at Arizona Stadium. We're going to go into overtime. I expected J.J. Molson to make the kick. Mm-hmm. I really did. Kevin Sumlin calls timeout, ices the kicker, and then he misses the next attempt, wide right. Mm-hmm. Arizona wins the ballgame. I think that to me was one of the most defining moments for Arizona in the first half of the season.
Absolutely. You ever had a Molson ice, by the way?
I have not.
Oh, yeah. Decent. Yeah. J.J. Molson, heir to the Molson beer fortune. Yeah. But like we said, I think off air, I think he'll be just fine in life. Missed field goals or not, he'll be fine.
Yeah. Honorable mention. Honorable mention for top moment. I think we have to cite the 99-yard drive against Texas Tech. And I sort of feel like if I had known that Ryan was going to pick the tape play, I might have picked the 99-yard drive. But that was pretty awesome as well. It was entirely running plays. Mm-hmm. 13 play drive, obviously starting from your own 1 yard line, to put, you know, really break the spirit of the Red Raiders and kind of put that game away. I think it was 7+ minute drive.
Yeah.
You know, Justin, as a former offensive lineman, that's gotta be like the greatest feeling in the world where you're just imposing your will on the other team.
Cause it's just downfield the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you dominate for 99 yards and the play results in a touchdown, and that touchdown ends up being pretty much the score that ices the game. Mm-hmm. That's a damn good feeling.
And it was a really kind of out of character move for them, right? I mean, we've spent the last 9 months talking about Khalil Tate, and really in that drive, I mean, he was just handing the ball off. And
yeah.
To me, that's what was so impressive. What it went was because it went so against character for them, and really, yeah, great moment.
What about this is Ryan's favorite category, and he was rubbing his hands.
The floor here.
Best uniform combination. Ryan, the floor is yours.
Can we start? Can we all agree on a couple basic facts before we go on this? Something's got to happen with their uniforms.
Yes.
Helmets are good. Fine with the helmets. Don't care about the helmets. They're good. But those jerseys, the numbers are too big. They're impossible to read. The sunset stuff, I actually kind of like on the sleeves. But it's either not, you either need to get rid of it or make it better. I'm not sure. Arizona's football uniforms are in the bottom, like, two in the Pac-12.
I think they're the worst in the Pac-12.
Oregon State's new stuff's pretty brutal. But yeah, it's not good. So.
I don't know. You could do a lot of decent things with black as your color.
Yeah. Well, here's what Arizona should do. And nobody's asked me, but we have a podcast, so I can do this. Look at what the Houston Texans do. Just do what they do. Houston Texans manage to wear navy helmet, navy jersey, white pants, or white. You know, they have a red alternate that they wear only a couple times a year because their primary color is navy, just like Arizona's. Just mimic that. Navy helmet or white helmet at home. Go, I don't want to say basic, but just look a little bit more like a football team to me. And I'm an old man, but that's just me.
What's your best uniform combination, though?
My best uniform combination this year is what they wore in the season opener at Hawaii. I love that USS Arizona-inspired helmet. I wish that they would have worn the jersey and corresponding pants that they wore when they played Hawaii a few years ago at home. I think that would have been really sharp. It's the best look they've had, I would argue, since the Desert Swarm era days. The basic red A, the story behind it. And everything, I thought that was just a really cool look. And again, if you're going to mix and match the uniform combinations like Kevin Sumlin does, let's see that USS Arizona uniform more than once a year, more than once every 3 years. Let's see it a lot.
I also picked that uniform mainly because I just like the white jerseys. I think the white jersey of the current
jerseys
that they have is by far the best. Yeah, the numbers are readable, which... Mm-hmm. It's a nice thing. I mean, I've got like, you know, 60-inch like HD TV at home, and I just get up off the couch and like go right up to the TV to sort of sometimes figure out when I'm rewatching the game, like, who is that? Like, who is doing that? Because the numbers are so hard to read. The blue on red, the red on blue. There's no white piping around the numbers to make them pop.
Imagine if you're sitting in the stands too.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's totally. Not just our 60-inch TVs. Imagine if you're sitting in the stands. I know that a large segment of Arizona's fan base skews maybe a little bit older, I mean, I, those numbers need to be easy to read, and they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll, of course, we'll see the throwbacks against Oregon State for homecoming. I think everyone's very much excited about that. My personal favorite combination they haven't worn yet this year, I like those matte blue helmets with the white jerseys and the blue pants. Right.
Can I
ask the one that works for me?
Can I ask a question? You guys might not know this. Are the throwbacks going to be actual throwbacks, or are they going to be faux-backs? Or is it going to be what they wore back
then?
Oh.
Or is it going to just be, oh, the white helmet that Arizona already has and the navy jersey that Arizona already has?
No, they were holding up a jersey that I thought, like, and they were implying that it was going to be that look with the white numbers, right?
Killer. That's great. That's awesome.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're not going to actually use the jerseys that were used
back then.
Like the mesh. Look like practice jerseys.
Why not?
Great.
Why not?
Be great.
You know, guys.
Giant shoulder pads too.
Yes.
Cowboy collar.
Cowboy collar. Very nice. Very nice.
What's yours, Justin?
I think I'm going to go with the all blue. What game was that against? Was that against
UCLA?
The reason why I picked the all blue is for one reason only. It's because of the helmets. I think the navy helmet that they have now with the mat. I think it's the best navy blue helmet they've had as a program.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, they put an all red block A on it, mm-hmm. and it doesn't look good. It's not,
Same reason as the numbers on
doesn't
the jerseys.
It doesn't pop.
It doesn't pop. Now, against UCLA, they put just a normal block A on the helmet. It's got some pop to it. And it reminded me of the old navy blue helmets
I think it says something about Arizona's uniforms when your pick is when they put the old sticker back on the new helmet. I think that means that progress must be made.
Absolutely.
Yes.
100%. They need new uniforms next year. I loved the USS Arizona ones that they wore against Hawaii what year was that? 2016?
16.
Yeah.
Great. Haven't brought those back for whatever reason, but those were awesome. It was kind of a gray.
Yeah, gray jersey, red pants. See, here's what you should do, I think.
We should have a whole podcast on this.
It looks like we're having Ryan's a whole podcast dream. About this. I think when you're at home, wear a white helmet, a navy jersey, and white pants, because that's the traditional look. That's what Arizona's best teams always wore. If you want to wear gray and black and silver, whatever the heck you want to wear, that's fine. Wear it on the road.
Interesting. What about second half breakout players for this year? This is the last category, and then we'll get into our Pac-12 picks for the week. Second half breakout player. Lev,
yeah.
Interesting pick on your end.
You guys did not like my pick because I picked J.J. Taylor, he's not a young player.
What
he's
a
not
bold
a freshman.
Prediction. Yeah.
He's not an emerging guy, but by definite, like, what does this mean exactly, I guess, is the question. And someone who's going to just blow up in the second half. Regardless of what his prior resume said, J.J. Taylor had, 301 yards mm-hmm. in the first half of the season, missed the better part of three games because of injuries. This is a guy coming off a 1,400-yard season. I think it's going to be a heavy dose of J.J. over the second half. I think we're going to get a bunch of 100-yard games. I think he's going to run for 600, 700, maybe even 800 yards over these final six games. And I think it might also be the final six games of his career. He hasn't said that. He sort of implied it a little bit when we were talking to him the other day about how when he's like, as you get older, you know, time is not on your side, I believe was the quote.
He's 21. Go
but
ahead.
He's a redshirt freshman, right. And he's a running back.
Right.
And he's played a lot of football here. So I don't know. If I'm a running back and I've got any chance of playing in the NFL, like, I'm leaving as soon as I can. Because there's only so many hits that your body can take.
Right.
So again, this, I'm not reporting this, just sort of speculating on this, and it's sort of a logical leap, but JJ's my breakout player for the second half.
He also was talking about how Steven Strasburg has been the breakout player for the Washington Nationals here in the playoffs. So very
Howie Kendrick. Maybe that's a better
breakout.
One. Yeah.
Breakout. I've got Booby Curry. He has exactly one catch this year. He has been hurt most of the season, came back 2 weeks ago against Colorado.
Yep.
He has one catch. But you know what? He's 6'2", 206. This is a wide receiving core that I think is still searching for somebody to step in and really take over. I know that they've been sharing the ball well, but, you know, there's room for a guy like a Booby Curry in this passing attack. And, you know, if Arizona at some point makes a change at quarterback, whether it's for injuries or other reasons, you know, Grant Gunnell was his high school teammate. I think that there's something to be said for the rapport that they have. So my prediction here is that Booby Curry has a big touchdown catch or a major play at some point here in the next even 2 weeks. I think that, you know, they're going to try to use him and make him a factor in this offense in the second half of the season.
Does he emerge as wide receiver one?
Good question. I don't know. He's a true freshman. I would say no. I think it's wide receiver one's a lot of pressure on a new guy.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a role for him in this offense going forward. With that size and those measurables, I think it's there.
My second half breakout player, and this was Les' pick for newcomer so far through this season, that's defensive tackle Trayvon Mason. You know, I compared him to a PJ Johnson from a year ago, because as the season progressed, PJ Johnson got a whole lot better. And now that we're at the halfway point in the season, Trayvon Mason is in the same role. He's getting better as the season progresses. So I think with Mason, he's got 21 tackles this season, which is the most out of any Arizona defensive lineman. He's got 2.5 TFLs. He does not have a sack. I expect him to have at least 2 sacks by the time the season's over with. All right, guys. So those are our midseason awards. If you want our collection, if you want to go check out our picks, make sure you go to the Wildcaster app and Tucson.com to check them out. All right, guys. So another full slate of Pac-12 football is upon us. First off, let's get our picks in. UCLA, Stanford.
Thursday night game. Thursday. So we're recording this earlier Thursday. In the day on Thursday. You might not hear it until Friday. The result might be out there already. I think this is sort of a loser leaves home kind of match here. UCLA desperate to just get something positive going. It's just been a disaster of a second season so far for Chip Kelly. Stanford, did they right the ship against Washington? I mean, is this the Stanford team we're going to see moving forward, or was that a blip that just happened to be a good matchup for them? I think regardless of all that, I just don't trust this UCLA team on the road, especially. I think Stanford will make fewer mistakes. They'll play their type of game, and they'll win kind of a low-scoring, ugly affair.
Lev, you've convinced me now over the course of the season that Stanford is not special this year. I think Stanford's just okay. But you know what? It's hard to win on the road in Pac-12 play. And for that reason alone, I like Stanford to win and win decisively. I think the line's 3.5. As of right now, I think Stanford wins and covers.
Yeah, I'm going to take Stanford in blowout fashion, actually. I think, I wouldn't say blowout fashion. I would say by a couple of touchdowns. It's like you said, guys, it's tough to win on the road in the Pac-12. UCLA is struggling big time right now. I don't see it getting much better for the Bruins. I like the Cardinal at home. All right, now let's go ahead and move to Saturday's slate. Oregon State taking on the Cal Golden Bears in Berkeley. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Golden Bears. Is there starter back? Garber?
No, I don't think so.
No.
So we have Devin Monster playing. Mm-hmm. Quarterback for the Cal Golden Bears. Even with Monster, he almost beat Oregon on the road in Autzen Stadium. Well, Lev is...
I mean, it was 17-7, right. And they were up 7-0 and never scored again. Right. So...
But...
It was a competitive game.
It went down to the fourth quarter
in
Autzen, which is pretty tough to do. Oregon State did beat UCLA in the Rose Bowl, but again, it's UCLA. I like the Golden Bears.
I think I'm going to pick the upset here. I like Oregon State. And here's why. I think Oregon State is incrementally getting better and better. The way Cal plays, it's like the old Virginia basketball thing. Cal plays a style that I think does not lend itself to blowouts. I think it keeps other teams around. And I think that if Oregon State gets through, say, 3 quarters and they're still within a score of this game, I think that they're going to win. And, you can all point and laugh at me a week from now, and I'm sure you will. But I think the Beavers win, shake up the Pac-12 a little bit, prove that they're not as horrible as we all think they are, and that Cal's not as good as we think they are.
I mean, I don't think that's ridiculous at all, given how bad Cal's offense has been since the quarterback injury happened. Mm-hmm. I like the points for sure. I would not lay the 10.5 in this game. I would take Oregon State with those points. They have a good offense. My concern is that Cal is just going to come out and just run the ball down mm-hmm. their throats. They're going to run like 60 times and pass 10. And that's just, and if they have to punt, they have to punt. They'll rely on their defense. They'll just kind of ugly up the game and emerge with a victory by, you know, somewhere in the 3 to 6 point range.
12:30 p.m. kickoff on ABC. Number 12, Oregon, visiting number 25, Washington. Ducks, Huskies, who do you got?
Man, that's tough. That's tough. I didn't see much from Washington last week that I'd like, to be honest with you. They're big on both sides of the ball. I don't like their quarterback. I don't think there's a ton to like for a team.
You don't like
their
quarterback?
Washington?
Eason?
No. He looks the part. He looks the part.
Oh,
man.
That fourth quarter.
Oh.
The passes he was making in the fourth quarter against Arizona. That's first round right there.
Yeah, I just don't think they're that good. And I think that a lot of their strengths, which is big on both lines and fast, et cetera, are things that Oregon has too. So I like Oregon winning on the road.
I'm leaning toward the Ducks as well. I think this is going to be a battle all the way to the very end. Bitter rivals, maybe two of the top, four most physical teams in the Pac-12. Mario Cristobal has really changed the mm-hmm. vibe at Oregon. He's really emphasized line play. He's a former offensive line coach, I believe.
And offensive lineman.
And they might have the best offensive, one of the top five offensive lines in the country. Penei Sewell, the left tackle, is a future first round pick, among other guys who are going to play in the league for Oregon. It sort of feels like, I heard someone say this the other day. I can't remember who it was, but they were saying that Oregon played LSU maybe 6-7 years ago, and it's almost as if the two teams have like reversed roles since then. Like LSU is now kind of the flashy, wide open offensive team in the SEC, whereas Oregon is this sort of defensive oriented, old school team in the Pac-12, which is weird. But I love the way their defense is playing, and I just feel like they think they've got a shot at this thing, and they're going to do everything they can not to blow it.
Every time I think of LSU, I always think of Ed Orgeron as like a Flintstones character. Who does he remind you of?
Yeah, Fred Flintstone.
Fred Flintstone?
Yeah, that's perfect.
I'm going to go with the Ducks in this one. We talked about this earlier in the podcast, Lev, on Monday. How many points has Oregon's defense given up?
Yeah, I think the average over the course of the season. Yeah, the average is 8 per game or so for the opposition. And they haven't allowed double digits since the Auburn game.
That is nuts. That is nuts. And I know Washington, they show that they can really flip a switch in that fourth quarter against Arizona last week.
Yeah.
They scored 24 points. But
to Ryan's point, though, like, how are they not winning that game by more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With all the gifts they were given earlier, all the turnovers, the block punt, all that stuff, still somehow it's a one-score game
fourth. This is a team prone to long offensive lapses against a defense that doesn't give up a lot of points. I mean, I think that's a recipe for an Oregon win.
Yeah, I like the Ducks winning in this one. Although, I do think it goes all the way down to the wire. ASU taking on Utah on Pac-12 networks. I would have thought College Game Day would make a trip out to Salt Lake City for this game.
This is the main event. I mean, we just talked about Oregon-Washington, and that's nice. But, you know, as far as we're concerned in the Pac-12 South, this is a huge game. It's a huge game.
Yeah.
Who you like, Michael Levin?
It is a huge game. I like Utah. I know Arizona State has been playing really well, but Utah has been playing better. I know that it was only Oregon State, quote unquote, but they killed Oregon State. I mean, it was like all business, took it to them. I think they're a more physical team than just about anybody that they play. We've talked about this before, Justin, when Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss are healthy, this is a different Utah team. You can't be more impressed with Jaden Daniels, anything that he's done. I mean, he's been incredible. He's going to be the offensive freshman of the year in the Pac-12. He might be an All-American down the road. But, man, it is a tough task for a true freshman to go on the road to a place like Salt Lake City. I'm surprised the spread is as high as it is. I'm seeing 13.5. I think that's a bit much because, as I said earlier, Arizona State tends to play everybody close, but I can see this game being something like 27-17 in favor of the Utes.
Right. I think ASU to me comes back to this question, right? Are they lucky or are they good? They've won a lot of very close games this year. Is that the mark of a good team, or is that the mark of a lucky team? And I think we'll find out Saturday. I, like you, think this is going to be a closer game than most people think. The fact it's being played during the daytime helps. There's not going to be that weather factor there. If there is a good time to play Utah, it's during the day. That said, I think it's close, but Utah wins.
Did you get a chance to see that ASU HBO special that aired earlier?
In the DVR. Didn't get to it last night.
Okay. I haven't seen it either, but seeing a lot of Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And apparently Frank Darby makes this like insanely sweet tea. It gives diabetes. I highly recommend that. I think it's a great recruiting tool. You know, it's like Hard Knocks for college football.
Mm-hmm. Sweet tea or being on HBO?
Both.
No, going back to, you know, the Utah game against ASU, I like Utah controlling the line of scrimmage. I think they win by at least 10 points in this game. Going back to what Lev said about Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss, Tyler Huntley was 14-17 passing for 247 yards and two touchdowns. Zach Moss had five carries for 121 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, this is one of the best 1-2 punches in the Pac-12, right? Mm-hmm. I like Utah winning big against ASU. All right, now let's go ahead and look at another interesting game before we get to Arizona-USC, and that is Colorado on the road against Washington State in Pullman.
Man, I called the earlier game a loser leaves home match. This is definitely a loser leaves home match. Washington State 0-3 in the Pac-12. I think this is the get right game for the Cougars. Colorado is reeling right now. I mean, they looked really bad against Oregon, and I don't know who makes the schedules, but man, having to go to Oregon 1 week and then go to Washington State the next, that's a really tough back-to-back situation. I don't like what I'm seeing from that Colorado defense at all. Mm-hmm. If Khalil Tate passed for 404 yards against them, how many yards is Washington State going to pass for? I like the Cougars big.
Could not agree more.
Mel Tucker, does he wear shorts in Pullman?
No.
He might be the first coach ever to do that.
That'd be awesome.
Did he wear the shorts last? I don't think he wore them last week because they lost against Arizona. So the shorts might be going to the back of the closet at this point.
Mel Tucker does not wear shorts, and Colorado does not get the win against the Cougars and Pullman. All right, 6:30 p.m. kickoff on Pac-12 Networks. Lev and I will be out there in L.A., Arizona taking on the USC Trojans in the Coliseum. Interesting game for Arizona, looking to bounce back from their loss against Washington. USC a little bit banged up, especially on that defensive side of the ball, specifically in their secondary. This is a game that I think Arizona can win, but I want to hear what you guys have to say about it.
I think Arizona can win. I'm not sure if Arizona will win. I think you need to have a special team to win at the LA Coliseum at night in Pac-12 play. I'm not sure what we've seen from Arizona yet leads me to believe that they're that special. But we'll find out a lot in the game. I mean, you know, it's funny. You know, this is the first league game all year, maybe the second league game where you could say, yeah, it's maybe a coin toss, right? I thought Arizona was better than UCLA, better than Colorado. This is sort of a prove it game for them. And so I think I like USC to win. I'm not sure it's going to be terribly close. I think USC by 13.
Yeah, the margin last time that they went to the Coliseum ended up being 14 points. That was the game in which Khalil Tate led that crazy comeback in the second half. I think they were down 35-6 in the third quarter. They tied it 35 apiece, and then long drive for USC, a turnover, another touchdown. It ended up being 49-35. I can see a similar type of score. The concerns that I have in this game, Christian Rector, Jay Tufele, Marlon Tuipulotu, Drake Jackson, that's the starting defensive line for USC. Mm-hmm. Those guys worry me. They're all good. They're all big and strong. You've got injuries at both guard positions. We don't know if Robert Conjol is going to be available for this game. We don't know if Cody Creason is going to be available. We also saw a formula that Washington executed with the way that they rushed the passer, very aggressively sending their linebackers on run blitzes and early downs, and having a very contained pass rush. The flip side of that is I don't know if USC is disciplined enough to pull that off. You know, they let Ian Book get free, I think, for a couple key scrambles late in that game against Notre Dame that really hurt them. You know, if if can they replicate the Washington game plan? I don't know. But the defensive line worries me. And also, they've got so many good wide receivers on that team. And Jace Whitaker, after a really strong start to the season, he's kind of slumped lately. I think we're going to see a lot of Christian Roland Wallace out there, with maybe Jace moving to the inside. I can see him matching up with Amon-Ra St. Brown. But even if you take him out, you still got Tyler Vaughns. You still got Michael Pittman. So I'm taking the Trojans.
And, yeah. And if we want to talk about which team has given Arizona the most fits in conference play over the years, I think it's been Washington State. USC now runs that offense. That is not a good sign.
Keaton Slovis returned to the lineup. Mm-hmm. Arizona native, going to play against the Wildcats. You know, this game is in L.A., so it's personal for a lot of these guys. It's personal for J.J. Taylor, and it's very personal for a guy who goes by the name of Khalil Tate. You know, Khalil Tate hasn't won a game in Los Angeles since being the starting quarterback for the Arizona Wildcats. And, you know, in 2017, you saw it, Lev. I mean, he was emotional on the field. He was tearing up after that game because he knew that he had it. It was right there. A team that he grew up admiring. I know, you know, he also admired UCLA, but, you know, when you're a football player growing up in L.A., you always watch the Trojans.
A lot of his high school teammates went to USC too. Mm-hmm.
So I think this game is personal for Khalil Tate, as for a lot of guys. And you know what? I think this is going to be one of those moments for Khalil Tate where he becomes a gamer.
He's going
to
do it. He's going to do it. Justin.
I got the Arizona Wildcats winning.
Look at that.
It's going to be a close one. I got Arizona winning 30-24.
I want one of those patented Justin Spears, 30-24, but how? How are they going to do it? Block punt? What's it going to be?
Getting specifics.
No specifics.
USC is going to be in a position where they got to put together a last-minute touchdown. Mm-hmm. I think Khalil Tate will drive Arizona, and then J.J. Taylor will punch it in. Arizona, you know, they go up. So now it's 30-24, and Arizona's defense is forced to make a stop.
Okay.
And they force a fumble. I think they force a fumble. They sack Keaton Slovis, and it's going to be Jalen Harris who gets the sack. They fumble, Arizona recovers, they kneel it, Wildcats win.
Man, that is specific. Love it.
I love it too. So, I mean, based on what we talked about earlier about how little pass rush pressure they've been able to generate, it seems like a highly unlikely scenario, but
if it happens,
I admire the audacity of it.
Yes.
You gotta be outlandish every now and then on podcasts.
I hear you.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Arizona taking on USC. Kickoff is set for 6:30. You can watch it on Pac-12 networks. You can also follow the Wildcaster on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for live coverage. And make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free. It's on the App Store and Google Play. And also subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Lev, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment, or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building, or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell, or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.